Hello. I thought I'd enjoy myself while I drop some knowledge on you. This is a reading of Dinosaurs, A Concise Natural History. We are in Chapter 7 on Sericea, and I thought we'd make this more interesting. I have two toys with me. I have one that's already in, actually. It's a little vibrator, and that'll be on the whole time. And then I have my Itachi for when things make this a little more interesting at the end. So let's learn about some sauropods. Here we go. Turn it on. Oh, okay. I'm gonna put this over here. Learn about the song of the Sericean. Hadrosaurs have attracted the most attention, in large part because of the striking solid or hollow crests, many of them chambered, borne by many genera. The hollow crest morphology was once thought to relate to the aquatic habits of the group, or to smell, but studies suggest that internal chambers of the crest would have made good resonating chambers, producing loud, low-frequency sound, a sort of Mesozoic alpenhorn. With that insight, much of the discussion now centers on intraspecific competition, see Chapter 5, and sexual selection, Chapter 6. To convey information about the species, sex, and even rank, crests had to have been visually, and, if part of their function was a resonating chamber, vocally distinctive. Only then could they have promoted successful matings between consenting adults. How strongly is the role of sexual selection implied in bihadrosauric crests? Paleontologist J.A. Hobson made 5 predictions that test the hypothesis that hadrosauric crest morphology was about sexual selection. Okay, I'm gonna turn a little toy onto a higher speed. One, if communication and display were important, hadrosaurs must have both good hearing and good vision. 2, if the crest served the dual role of visual display and as a vocal resonator, then its external shape did not necessarily mimic the internal shape of the resonating cavities inside. If crests acted as visual signals, then they should be species-specific in size and shape, and they should also be sexually dimorphic. If the crests are a visual cue, they ought to be increasingly distinctive as the numbers of hadrosaurs living together increases. 5, the crests should become more distinctive through time as a consequence of sexual selection. How did these hypotheses fare? Hypothesis 1 is relatively well supported in that hadrosaurs, to judge from their selectronic rings, had relatively large eyes, implying acute vision. Similarly, preserved middle and inner ear structures suggest that a wide range of frequencies was audible to these animals. Hypothesis 2 is upheld in virtually all of these cases, in that the profile of the crest is more elaborate or extensive than the walls of the internal plumbing. Hypothesis 3 is amply upheld, in large part thanks to studies on the growth and development in, Latin, lambiocerine hadrosaurids, which show that crests become most prominent when an animal approaches sexual maturity. Moreover, adult lambiosaurines are known to be dimorphic, particularly in terms of crest size and shape. Could these morphs have been male and female? Hypothesis 4 is based on the idea that distinctiveness could be an advantage during the breeding season. It was tested at Dinosaur Provincial Park in Alberta, Canada, where 5 distinctly equipped species of hollow-crested hadrosaurid and 1 species of solid-crested hadrosaurid all lived together in multi-species bliss. In support of the hypothesis elsewhere, where hadrosaurid diversity is lower, the distinctiveness of the crest is decreased. Interestingly, however, hypothesis 5 is not well supported, for lambiosaurine crests, at least, arguably become less distinctive over time. If the crests were used for species recognition, ritualized display, courtship, parent-offspring communication, and social ranking, the accentuated nasal arch seen in Gryposaurus, Myosaura, and Brachylophosaurus, Latin makes things harder, may have been used for broadside or head pushing during male-male combat. Inflatable flaps of skin possibly covered the nostrils and surrounding regions. If present, these could have been inflated and used for visual display as well as noise-making. More a Mesozoic bagpipe. In Procerolophus and Saurolophus, a sac might have extended into the solid crust that extended above the ice, while in Edmontosaurus, where the nasal arch is not accentuated nor is there a crest, the complex excavated nostril region may have housed an inflatable sac. Unfortunately, these soft tissue-based hypotheses are speculative. In Lambiosaurin or hollow-crested hadrosaurs, the crest perched atop the head must have provided for instant recognition. This would have been by visual cues as well as by low honking tones produced in the large resonating chamber of the crest. Oh boy. Okay. Let's talk about... Oh, there's so many pages. Let's go to the summary. Oh boy. Speed 3. One of the pots were the most numerous and diverse herbivores of Dinosauria, consisting of iguanodonts, hadrosaurs, or duckbills, and a few other distinctive, more primitive forms. Although equipped with robust back legs and long tails, and undoubtedly capable of sustained bipedal locomotion, hooves on certain fingers, hadrosaurs and iguanodontians suggest that these animals spent most of their quiet time in a quadrupedal stance as well. Ornithopods ranged from a small size, about 2 meters long, to rather large, about 15, and evidently colonized virtually every inhabitable region of the globe. Ornithopods had a very advanced chewing capabilities. The skull had an inset tooth row indicating cheeks, as well as the tripartite division of chewing herbivores, including the cropping beak, a diastem enclosed the pressed cheek teeth for grinding, and in virtually all cases, a large coronoid process suggesting strong jaw adductor muscles. Hadrosaurs took chewing to unprecedented heights as the evolution of a, oh geez, pleurokinetic skull combined with dentobatteries. Corpulence and stomach content suggest that hadrosaurs needed all the teeth they had. Their diet appears to have been coarse and fibrous. Ornithopods were very social animals, none more than the hadrosaurs. The discovery of many boneheads, bone beds, attest to this as to a remarkable and complex variety of sexual dimorphic head and skull features found in many ornithopods, suggesting that life as an ornithopod involved intensive sexual selection. In hadrosaurs, at least, communication may well have been enhanced by a variety of vocalization. Okay, I'm gonna turn the wand on for the last two paragraphs. We'll see if we even make it there. Oh! The genus Myosauria has been given the view of child-rearing, duckbill-style, complete growth series from hatchlings to nests to adults are known, and considerable evidence exists that hadrosaurs grew remarkably quickly. Nesting apparently was communal, and parental care was expected on ultra-cool young. Duckbills were a likely case strategist. Interestingly, other ornithopods, such as the genus from North America, may have raised particular young and favored in our strategy of childbearing. Ornithopod evolution was characterized by an increase in the sophistication of chewing specializations. Along a large ornithopods, it could be argued that in North America and Asia, at least, the highly advanced hadrosaurs ecologically replaced the non-hadrosaur iguanodontians. That's the end of the summary. Yes, please. Oh, should we bump it up to the high speed? Yes. little is too much. Oh, even the little is too much. Oh, fuck. Watch it, WA. I hope you learned something about, what were we talking about? Ornithopods. I hope you learned about ornithopods and saurischians. Next time, maybe more dinosaurs. Good night.